So, Pop, given all the things that happened when I was in school, did you ever think I'd grow up to be an educator, a teacher?
No, I had many no.
And it wasn't, it wasn't doing things like, you know, spitting off bridges or flipping off cars. It was music that I wound up teaching, and karate, and now I'm working on baking.
God help me.
How you doing, folks? My name is Patrick.
And I'm dear old dad.
You're listening to a special edition of Old Time Banjo Without the Bullshit on teaching.
Oh, one of my favorite subjects.
Well, it's an interesting subject to me because I was brought up in a tradition where everybody was a teacher. Everybody was a student. Everybody was a teacher. It was an interactive growing process that was completely symbiotic. Utah Phillips used to describe it, going to folk festivals, and you'd see the moms one mom taking care of everybody's kids, somebody else cooking on the barbecue, musicians coming together as a community. So imagine my surprise in the 2000s when that changed. And we've been to workshops where it used to be interactive, and we go back years later and sit there and watch me play. And yeah. Maybe I'll answer a question.
Yeah, maybe. Ask me the wrong question, I'll throw you out of the class. Well,
funniest story I ever heard about my teaching, right after I did Foggy Mountain Fakedown, I took the rhythm for Foggy Mountain Breakdown, which is normally played finger-picking, and it was always thought that that rhythm was almost impossible to get with frailing banjo. And I used to give the same standard explanation everybody else gave. Somebody call out Foggy Mountain Breakdown, I'd say, well, that's a bluegrass song. I play old time banjo, as if the notes in old time
are
notes in bluegrass are different. I mean, it was completely dumb. And I did that for years until a very large lady and I swear to God, Dad saw her in an actual moo-moo, requested Foggy Mountain Breakdown, and I said, that's a bluegrass song. I play old time. And she goes, that just means you can't do it. And Pop looks at me and goes, she's got you there, boy. So I went home and I figured it out. And the trick was not looking at the superficial aspects of the performance, but the foundation of the song and building it up from there. So once I went online and started doing it, that would have been about 2003.
Yeah, it goes back a ways.
It was before the How and Dow.
Mm-hmm.
So a friend of mine calls me up from Florida, and he's at a banjo camp, one of the early banjo camps.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And he's laughing hysterically. I said, what are you doing down there? He says, well, my in-laws gave me a ticket as a gift. I couldn't say no. I already knew how to play, so I'm not really a student. I'm still learning, but this guy was already playing solid banjo. So he goes down, and he said, a couple things happened. None of the teachers wanted to teach playing and singing. They all got really uncomfortable about that. And there was a lot of talk, a very big deal, about a very famous old-time banjo guru, a legend, was going to teach Foggy Mountain Breakdown frailing style. Everybody waits all weekend, and the guy comes in. I'm not going to say the name, because if I say the name, even though I know this is true, it'll cause a riot. That's how big this name was. And he comes in with a gourd banjo. And the first three quarters of the workshop is retuning everybody's modern banjos down
to match a toy banjo.
Now, when you do that with gourd banjos, the problem is it's tuned so low that on steel strings it would be slack. There's also a problem with gourd banjos in that the design we use for gourd banjos only dates back to 1991.
No.
An artist named Scott Diddley came up with the idea of sliding the gourd onto a perch pole like a dowstick banjo. Before that, the only real evidence we have of gourd banjos is paintings and that failed experiment in the Foxfire books. So we're already in a kind of a loophole here. The banjo is obviously a prop. The tuning down is obviously killing time. And then he tries to play it on his banjo, and it doesn't really work. And people in the group are actually looking at each other by now, and they say it doesn't really work. And, of course, the guy's learning from us. So he skips out because he said the food was terrible, goes to a restaurant for lunch. The booth behind him, in come all the banjo teachers from the banjo camp. And the name I will name, Ken Perlman, at one point, as my friend sat there eating with his back turned to the group, trying not to laugh, pounds on the table, "It's that son of a bitch, Pat Costello." He said, "I had to hold myself together, and I had to run to a payphone and call you." That was 20 years ago, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing is, the teaching situation as I see it, what people come to me with, I'm at a loss. Because what's happened in bluegrass, when people, there was a big period in the 70s where people really worried bluegrass banjo was going to die out. And the reason was everybody who was teaching, everybody who was rising in the ranks at the time, had learned by slowing down records. You plug in the Victrola, you can slow it down with a lamp. I mean, I've heard the story so many times, and you slow the music down to... And they could, if you do that hard enough and long enough, you can learn the Earl Scruggs songbook. And you can actually get work as a banjo player, running around doing things like that. But the problem is when you get thrown a song that's different, what do you do? I mean, I can remember the confusion Old Home Place caused, because it was in G, but it has a B major and an A major.
Oh, no.
Like Bad Bandy, Roy Brown. I mean, that's probably where they got the melody. When you listen to What Have They Done With The Old Home Place? Why did they tear it? And he's bad, bad, Leroy Brown. The rhythm's different. Chord structure is eerily similar.
Yeah.
that's what me, when you start really getting into the chords, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But in bluegrass, things really started to fall apart until there was, Tony Trischka was the first name that really came up. He was really stepping forward and trying to do crazy things with the banjo. Even though his experiments didn't always work, Robot Plane Flies Over Arkansas is ugh. But it got talked about a lot because it was so out there. And that was what was cool about it. And it sparked almost a revival. Okay, we're going to look at Scruggs, we're going to look at three-fingered, two-finger banjo, and the melodic. This whole sequence of events through the 70s and 80s brought about that modernized bluegrass that we played on the radio back in the 90s. In old time, we're in that kind of a similar salt flat, in that when people talk about a song, it's not like Cripple Creek. When somebody says Cripple Creek to me, I think, girls on Cripple Creek, bat half grown, jump on a boy like a dog on a bone. And whatever instrument I'm playing, whether it's my hands, singing, playing the harmonica,
the structure is the same.
The structure is the same. When you go to a banjo student, Cripple Creek is first string, fifth fret, strum thumb. Or if you're learning clawhammer, you leave the strum out. And you can't use quarter notes because the clawhammer guys say there's no quarter notes anymore. And the song becomes a study in remembering the notes as you run up and down them. And the crazy thing is people fail. I don't know if they fail to see the glass box they've sealed themselves into that way, or if it's the Carl Sagan thing with the bamboozle again, where they, when they realize it, they just refuse to admit it.
Well, there's a phalanx of them out there. They will not see that they've been had. And it's a shame. It really is. Because there's so much more to music, whether it's a banjo, a balalaika, a harmonica, a kazoo. There's so much more to it than memorizing notes.
And it's not even just the memorization that's more to it. Without the fundamentals, you're never free. You're always chained to that instructor, that tab sheet.
Well, it's like the guy at the big festival we used to go to. we're sitting there playing and jamming and having the ball. And here comes a guy walking by with a huge binder full of tablature. And he had a chair and a big, what do you call it, stand for the for the book. And he couldn't play anything they didn't have the tablature for.
Well, the thing that blew my mind...
He had no idea what he was doing.
What blew my mind that day was he actually expected us to retune our instruments, to play in the keys that matched his tab. And we're like, you know, screw you, buddy. I mean, if you want to play... When I was a kid, I knew Wildwood Flower as the notes. I didn't even know what key it was in. And we were jamming with Tiny at it wasn't Hibernia, it was Lyons.
Mm-hmm.
Under the willow tree. Mm-hmm. Willow tree was still standing by the pond.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I want to play it in C. I like the melody in C. And he starts playing Wildwood Flower beautifully in C. And I'm just staring at him. I says, well, I know it in G. He looks at me and says, you think I'm changing key for you? Learn the song. I just... and my first reaction was, you old... And then I realized it wasn't... Sometimes challenges are needed.
That's the way you grow.
And it's, I don't, I mean, Roger Sprung drove me crazy when I was a kid. I would bump into him and it was like baking soda and vinegar, or really vinegar and battery acid. two corrosive elements clashing into each other. And I would walk away snarling, but I would walk away wanting to be better.
He made you think.
And as much as I loved all my teachers in karate and in music, the thing I always loved best, even Paul would challenge me now and then. You know, how about you try that in the guitar instead or something like that? And it always was this urge for growth and to understand.
But like Paul used to say, I can't teach you anything. I can give you the tools to teach yourself. You have to have that inquisitiveness, that desire to dig into it, to go through the bullshit down to the bedrock.
Yeah. And one of the reasons I'm not really pro organized methods for this kind of music, and one of the reasons I don't really believe week to week lessons are that, you know, I'll do it if people really want it. When I'm available, I do it. But the week-to-week formula, the method formula, leaves out an important fact about this music is that it's always been self-directed. When you look at the Parchman Farm blues players, Son House, Booker Washington White, Muddy Waters, these guys all came out completely sounding different, and they were all drawn from the same well. The self-directed nature of music, the idea of the arts isn't to be a carbon copy of another person. The idea of the arts was to express yourself. And it was the idea of fine art is only a modern invention. People talk about like Shakespeare, like it's very serious and very... The crowd at the Globe Theater would get in for a penny and would throw dead geese at the actors doing Hamlet, you know. Alas, poor Yorick, I knew him well. Get that bird off me. It must have been awesome.
Why did they do that?
Because...
Were they trying to give them food or were they...
No, the thing with the Globe Theater, and there's a really great video in Wisecrack. They just did it recently and they talked about it and was glad somebody brought it up. The Globe Theater wasn't fine art. Shakespeare wasn't an artiste. The plays are full of dirty jokes that the crowd knew. And the poor could get in for nothing. Their kids could crawl on the floor, and there's even lines in Shakespearean plays about the kids eating half-bitten apples off the gallery floor because the mob was there. They loved the plays. They knew the stories. And they were interacting with the audiences. They were heckling with the crowd, with the actors. I would love to see Julius Caesar with a mosh pit. And that's, in a way, that idea of this is serious in the arts, it kind of leached into old time. And with folk, you see players like bands like New Lost City Ramblers came along, and they were playing the music that they heard in the recordings, and they started going out in the field. But then they got very serious about it. And the moment it got serious, the moment it became elevated, we lost something. and that the thing where workshops were interactive. I mean, the very first banjo workshop we ever went to was awesome. The guy sat on a log with a bottle of Rolling Rock, and we had a sing-along. And then somebody, we got one of the first editions of Rise Up Singing.
It was launched at that camp.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
And then we went a few years later, and the banjo teacher was wearing two finger picks on all four fingers, a thumb pick, and he was playing by opening and closing his hand. And he would do like Reuben James, where they would pick, you would finger pick the, keep a rolling pattern. La da 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 da. And when it came to the chorus, you go to the open and close. Tell me what were their names? Tell me what were their names? Did you have a friend on the
good ship, Reuben James?
It was fun. We were like, that's really cool. But he kept looking at us going,
well, you can't do that the way I do it.
And we looked at each other, and he did old 97. And we looked at each other, and we went, you know, well, he gave him his orders in Monroe, Virginia, and it came time for the melody. Wildwood Flower, he plays it, we play it. I mean, it went back and forth. He actually found me on the internet. 20 years later, it was in the early 2000s, and just ranted at me. And I was like, God, you were there to show us how wonderful you were, not to share the art with us. We were just there to take and give if we could.
That was where we played for the clog dancers.
Yep. Apparently, I upset a few people with that story. And I want to say something. I'm not a sexist. And I was a teenage boy. And if you're going to make a teenage boy apologize for looking at boobies on a beautiful woman who's clog dancing in front of him, I don't know what to say. Now, if you've worked with me in person in workshops, you know I am a gentleman.
Most of the time.
Sometimes you got to let your caveman out. Otherwise it gets mothballed. But the interactivity of the workshops was so amazing. And then
it wasn't so much teaching as sharing.
Right. And you felt like you were part of something. And then when you started teaching yourself, you realized you were part of something. And for a handicapped kid from Philadelphia, having that network to be part of, the Full Circle Music Society, we had a ball with these guys.
They were good people. Yeah.
They were wonderful. And now you go to a bluegrass festival and they'll say, well, so-and-so is giving a workshop. And it's a guy sitting on stage playing. But you're not going to get knee-to-knee with them. You're not going to be right there. I mean, how many times, I know it's not kosher today to say it, but how many lessons did I get, guitar, banjo, harmonica, where the guy was talking on a cigarette like this, and smoke going up one eye, and the eye's watering, and he's going, all right, kid, here's your C chord, and the cigarette smoke's going up your nose, and you try not to sneeze, and it's a real moment. It's a real connection, whereas first string, second fret, fifth fret, open. There's a different dynamic happening there, and I'm not sure how to break the, it's almost like it's frozen in time. It got bad, and nobody, for the last 20 years since the Howe and Dow came out, it's just been no chords, no quarter notes. Singing is impossible. 3/4 is impossible. What happened?
Well, they were challenged, and they don't have the character to learn or to apply themselves. And what I tell people is, if you are being taught either in a camp workshop kind of a thing, or one-on-one, or online, don't be afraid to challenge your teacher or your presenter, because there are no sacred cows. If someone is asking for your money, in exchange for information, you should know how deep that well is.
And know...
Are they a one-trick pony, or are they a musician?
And you can be respectful and still challenge. Don't ever let people tell you it's disrespectful to try and get somebody who's an expert to maybe do something outside the rehearsal.
Well, we know for a fact that the experts who go from camp to camp.
Well, that was one of the things said on that phone call. Like, I learned 12, 13 songs for a season, and that's it. These people all want to play and sing. I don't know these songs. Yeah, it's like,
and what do you know?
And that's the thing. This is the thing. One of the people say, well, you know, why don't you let this go? Well, there's two reasons this drives me nuts. Number one, nobody goes to any one source anymore. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I teach somebody to do this. Strike with the middle finger, clean quarter note, strum the chord, fifth string. Practice that. I come back, I get this. Picking up, maybe strumming with the little finger, maybe even picking with the thumb, over completely different posture. And I get this lecture. Well, so-and-so said this, and they said there's no wrong way to play. And I find it's easier to get the clear note this way. And I'm like, it's easier to get the clear note that way because you're doing it wrong. When you go to actually do something with that clear note, it's not going to work. And they'll come back to me years later, I'm getting ready to start over again. Can you help? And I can't. You can't unbreak the egg. And once you've taken the time to really root yourself in the wrong method, it's difficult to get out. I learned that the hard way with the guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the Mel Bay standard guitar method, the Hal Leonard standard guitar method, and even the Center Stream standard guitar method. I think that was either them or another publisher put that one out there. They were three different series. They were like five or six volumes. And by the time I was done with one of them, I was tying my left hand open with a handkerchief and pinning the handkerchief into my coat.
I remember that.
Because what was happening, I was playing a big old Dobro 33H guitar. Well, the photos in these manuals were from the 50s with Mel Bay playing electric jazz guitar with a neck probably as thin as a sheet of paper. And that with the light strings, low action, really good guitar, excellent neck, you can make those bar chords and fret all six strings. And when you're a teenager who's already jacked up his hand in karate, and you're looking at the pictures and this information is, what is this? And I actually asked a book distributor. We were talking to him about distributing the Howe and Dow. And his reply was, it doesn't have to work, it just has to sell. And I realized pretty quick that my hand was shot. I couldn't form chords. I had to actually go back to basics and relearn the fretboard all over again.
And thanks to that old man.
Yeah.
At the picking party.
Yeah, he actually cuffed me on the side of the head.
Come with me.
Well, because the guy had the naked lady on his banjo.
Yeah.
And then the guy, naked lady guy, who I'm not going to say because, you know, I referred to him as the naked lady banjo guy. He turned out to be a friend later.
Yeah.
Excellent banjo builder, and the naked banjo is still out there. He made two.
Did he make? I thought I made one.
Yeah. Remember, because he had the one with the naked lady straddling the panther.
Yeah.
Then he had the other one with the naked lady coming out of the pool.
Okay,
and
yeah.
And all the wood. I mean, the thing, it was amazing.
My favorite was the American Eagle.
Yeah, but, I mean, the other banjos.
You meet all kinds of them. But basically, you know, going back to the teaching thing, anybody can hang out a shingle and say, I am a teacher. And it's up to you or us or the public to say, what are your credentials? What can you do? Are we just supposed to believe that you can do what? Because if you claim that there are no chords on a banjo, how can you teach me music?
Not only that, if you're pushing people to things like nylon strings or gourd banjos, or and one of the big trends in old time is the banjos are literally built to sound a specific way. Now, the problem with that is a thing called monotone. You see, when I do not modulate the pitch of my voice, if I'm not louder or softer, it becomes a monotone. It becomes annoying because there is no emotion. It is devoid of soul, like a politician.
There's no rhythm. There's no joy in it.
And
you can almost see them. If you're looking at a video on YouTube or one of the stupid forums, you can almost see them struggling to remember the next measure of notes or reading. You can even sometimes see them reading the tablature.
You'll see me occasionally in videos. I'll look to the left or right because there's a computer screen with the lyrics on it. Tab's about useless for me because of dyscalculia, which explains a lot. I can use it. I can write it. But it was always... But with the banjo setup, and even the reading the tab while teaching, the monotone thing, without emotion, without raising and lowering of volume, without technique, you see, if I'm in a situation where I want my banjo to be soft, I will play softly. I'm not moving away from the microphone. I'm sitting right where I was. Now, if I want it a little louder.
A little louder, please. A little faster, please. Slow it down, please.
See, the banjo is capable of a wide range of tone. In order to do that, okay, you have to understand how it works. And that's mass. Banjo head stretched across a rim. You don't need a resonator because the brass hardware of the tension hoop is weighing down on the head.
And all them brackets.
And the pot itself... 3-ply, we gave up on the spun rim for a reason. I don't know why it's back. It shouldn't be back. It's not a good thing. Because you want the rim to be heavy enough to support a lot of brackets, because the brackets and the tone ring add to the mass of the instrument, which allow the instrument to respond to your touch. You're not driving the instrument. The instrument's responding to you. The difference is between petting a cat and tackling a cat.
I wouldn't tackle that damn thing of yours.
But all these things have been dropped, and the banjos all sound the same. Whether they have nylon or steel, they sound the same, which freaks me out a little bit. And the approach to songs is completely backwards. It's not Bob Ross painting with sound. It's put this fret here. Doing art in the most paint-by-numbers mechanical way possible. And it went from being just the way a couple people played to now, through this nonsense of people just citing fake sources on the internet, it's become the way. And I'm the oddball. You know, it's really strange. Patrick has chords in his book, and he's talking about singing in his books. I mean, there's Amazon reviews that were like, you know, you shouldn't, this book's a problematic after a certain point because he gets you into chords instead of tunings. Well, the book does teach tunings. And so to students out there, I'm not going to talk to the teachers, because if you're a good teacher, you've turned this off already. You already know this. And if you're a bad teacher, you're already punching the wall. I know this. This is one.
And we know who you are.
The stories we could tell. My favorite was the banjo camp. I won't say the name. We drove 14 hours to get there.
All the way across.
We won't say. Won't even say the state. And we get there, and he's hostile. And the first thing he says to me is, I've heard all about you. You don't touch a banjo in front of my students. And I was like, I'm just here to film. I only brought the banjo. I had the banjo in the car just so we'd have something to do, because that was where we stayed in the hotel. That wasn't really a hotel. It was a storage shed.
Oh, God.
The bedroom had a plywood with foam.
Plywood and...
Eggshell foam.
Pallet racks.
Oh, my God. So the camp was in a railroad logging camp. The train would go through. They had some places, And the first workshop I go to film, the instructor calls me out. I've already been asked by the guy running the camp.
Not asked.
I'm being nice.
Okay.
And I've got this woman who obviously doesn't know what she's doing. You know, oh, this guy thinks he's a banjo player. And she's like... I just turned the camera off. I'm like, okay, that's footage we don't have for this episode. And I found you, and we did the interview, and the interview was otherworldly. And we were served rotten food. The food... Okay, in Spanish galleons, when they would cross the oceans...
The food was better.
No, the food was usually spoiled. The reason spices were discovered was to hide the taste of gamey meat.
Yeah, yeah.
And this ham that was on the table had bugs on it. The fat had gone translucent. It was running. I'm just like, I don't even know if that's ham. So I'm talking to the students. I'm trying to get some, and everybody's saying the same thing. I know after my time here, I'm not a banjo player. It was one version or the other. There was nobody I talked to felt empowered. And I know the feeling of walking in the room and facing a grandmaster. I've done it three times in my life. Ed Parker, Ted Volrath, Remy Amador Precess. They were all scary, and they were all good teachers. And when I left, I was 6 feet off the ground. Remy made me a teacher. Ed Parker showed me that what I was learning in karate...
can be applied to music or anything else.
Ted Volrath taught me two things. Number one, don't fuck with Marines. He lost both legs in Korea, came home, became the first double amputee to become a black belt in a wheelchair. Workshop, I saw him. He was throwing big, big guys around, jumping out of his wheelchair, stomping on him with what was left of his legs. I turned to the crowd and go, you can do anything. And I was like, yes. I shook his hand and it hurt. And I was like, I love this guy. He's in a movie called Mr. No Legs. It was directed by Riku Browning, the guy who played the Gill Man in The Creature from the Black Lagoon. I look it up on YouTube. The Amazing Mr. No Legs, directed by Riku Browning. It's made in Florida. It is the most Florida movie ever made. Do not watch it alone. Do not play a drinking game watching this movie. You will die. But when I left the Ted Volrath workshop, I gave the photo away to one of my students years later, but he signed and wrote a note to me on a picture. And when I would get frustrated with my hearing, I would pull that out because I can do anything. Maybe my body's broken. Maybe I'm not perfect, but I can do. If I put my mind to it, if I train, I can do this. I'm not seeing that now. And I was Mr. Rogers on YouTube from 2006 to 2001. And I kept trying to show them, here's the system. If you practice, and there's got to be a way.
They all wanted the secret. You're holding something back. You're not giving us the right tab.
My favorite is the occasional. It comes up every now and then. I'm not going to say who. It comes up every now and then that I'm not really playing. There was for a while there in the banjo. Well, they claimed it was you.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So, the thing about teaching folks is it's not science. Dad was a plant manager. He can tell you what it takes to take a plant that was completely out of control and make it pass a 100% health inspection.
Yeah, and then after that, it was an electronic company. That was a bubblegum factory, the first one. But then there was an electronic company, a multi-million dollar contract. We were getting ready to lose the contract because the quality was so poor. The failure rate was so high, they were just going to cancel the contract.
Are those the transformers I made?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you didn't actually make them.
I had a seizure making transformers.
That was your last day on the job.
First day on the job.
But what I had to do was break everything down and make sure everyone was doing their job. The ones that didn't do their job or refused were fired. The ones that accepted and applied themselves the instruction thrived. And it took time. I asked them, give me 3 months and I'll turn this place around. Give me 40 acres. I'll turn his rig around. And I did. We went from an abysmal quality rate to a rate of one failure in like 6 million pieces, which is unheard of. But it was done with patience, discipline, a little pressure, and showing that you don't screw with me. If you do, I will fire your ass because there's no room for...
He fired his own son. But I'm going to say, add one thing. As somebody that was in those factories, there's one thing about Dad's system that he doesn't talk about a lot, and that is the people that took the training, applied themselves, got promoted.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was the wild thing. Everybody was... When I first went to the bubblegum factory, it was kind of like that scene in Elf where the elf goes, it smells like mushrooms here and everybody wants to hurt me. And before we left for Crisfield, I stopped in to say hey to Pop, and it was literally like that scene in High School High where the slum suddenly had ferns hanging from the streetlights and people were dancing up. I mean, it was like...
I started taking pride...
Yeah.
And being the best.
The shifts actually would have competitions on who could do the most productivity, the lowest failure rate. And I would look at Dad, and it's really wild when you see a system work that's not only fair, but allows everybody a chance to rise.
Yeah, and that was, I heard one day that somebody was bitching at the shop steward, Marie Bowman, wonderful woman. We solved a lot of problems together. And I heard her say, what the hell's the matter with you? Don't you understand? We're all equal to him. He treats us all the same. He follows the same rules we do. Shut your mouth and get back to work or get out of here. I think, my God, I've done it. You know? You have to take charge, take control, and that's the job of a teacher, a manager, a supervisor.
Right. You don't fire students when you're a music teacher, but you do the Roger Sprung, which is either the
challenge
look,
them,
the look, or sometimes just
I that, can't. You don't want to be taught. I'm not going to teach you anymore.
Or say the thing that's going to make the person mad enough to go practice for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And sometimes. To do the teaching job, you have to do that. You can't always be a misanthrope, but you also can't always be Tinkerbell.
Yeah, but I turned around three factories.
Yeah.
And all were different, but all were the same. It came down to people, a process, a quality system, and a little bit of effort, and the willingness to do the hard thing. In other words, do what's right, no matter what. No matter what.
When I did the music program for the special needs summer camp, mm-hmm. I mean, it was an impossible situation in a lot of ways because I hadn't had my hearing aids yet. I was almost completely deaf. And I'm in the situation where I have students that maybe only have partial use of one hand, and they want to play the guitar. They want to play the banjo, the ukulele, the harmonica. And I'm alone. And it was, at first, I started to panic. And then I realized, wait, each student as an individual, address that challenge without any emotion. Don't, I feel bad for this person. Take the emotion out of it. You've got to do it cold. And, okay, they can do this, they can't do that. How do we work around that? And then get them to work.
Yeah, just find something they can do and let them excel at that, at one thing.
And each person I turned to, it was an individual with an individual set of needs, but the training concepts were the same.
Yeah.
If they could only move the rhythm hand, okay, we're going to get you a flat pick, we're going to put this guitar across your lap, your helper is going to play the slide. And that afternoon, they were playing and singing How Great Thou Art. And Aaron, one of the guys ran the camp, he's like, you're doing great. And I'm like, oh, it's nothing, you know, the way everybody's gone, took off in the woods and cried my eyes out next to a creek full of rattlesnakes. You don't let them see that. You keep the drill sergeant going.
But if you look around, and I'm going to go off track a little bit here. If you look around at the hatred and the disrespect that is shown to Patrick.
Now, I want to say one thing to be clear. I am the most irritating human being that ever lived. But so I
this is being done and directed by people with no talent,
yep,
no skill, no ability. They're one-trick ponies. And when challenged, or when somebody says, I want to do what this guy does, meaning you, they go crazy. And then they attack. And it's been a swarm for 20 years.
Longer. It's been my first, we put our first workshop up in 97.
Wow.
And that was really, believe it or not, one of the first free banjo workshops. Yeah.
Well, we caught hell for that. And when we published The How and the Down.
Oh, my God.
We were actually contacted by a bunch of half-cuts from New York to send them copies, their banjoistas, to get permission.
Wasn't New York dead? Okay. Here's a detail to this story. Okay, folks, hang on to your hats. Pete Seeger was still alive. And it was Sing Out magazine.
That was New York?
No, that was Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And Sing Out magazine demanded samples, free copies of the book, to give to a gallery of banjo teachers to decide if it was worthy of review.
In other words, we had to get their permission.
This was Sing Out magazine. This was a magazine that used to be able to put in your pocket. It'd be full of songs, be full of stories, be full of interviews. And when this editor, who I think he's still the editor now, took it over, he turned it into crap. Big, oversized, expensive thing. And you can see how the magazine changed from Pete Seeger's vision just by the statement, we'll decide. I had to lick boots for them to decide if my book was worthy of review. And I didn't ask Sing Out to review the book.
No, we didn't ask him for anything.
I think Pete might have told him, because I was still writing back and forth with him. And I have a bravo from Peggy.
Yeah, yeah. But that was an interesting... And then I listened to these people, their playing and their ability, and they sounded like a bunch of... It sounded like Darla and Spanky putting on a show.
Well, I think there's an Emperor's New Clothes situation happening, too, where you can't grow up the way I grew up and not be a realist. I mean, I was the punching bag of my school for 12 years, and... Not just the kids, the nun. You don't grow up that way. In Catholic school, you're an idiot. Okay, So when I started playing, I never thought of myself as great. I think it's funny when people accuse me of hubris. I don't think you can find anything more self-loathing off of the borscht belt. I'm in like Don Rickles and Rodney Dangerfield level. So when they you're this and that, And on the other end of the spectrum, you get folks that don't really see what they're doing. It's like the American Idol auditions, when they get up and the judges go, do they realize they can't sing in key? They think they're going to compete at the national level? Do they know? And I don't think they do. I think the belief is, if you put on the garb and you wear the outfit and you talk the talk, you make the same sounds, you pretend that Over the Waterfall is the greatest song ever written and the banjo is subservient to the fiddle. If you play that role, that's enough. And maybe, everybody's got their own thing. If that's your thing, God bless you. There's folks that like to dress up like space aliens. Doesn't make them space aliens. If you want to dress up like a banjo player, it ain't going to make you a banjo player. But at some point, even if you're doing banjo cosplay, you have to look in the mirror and take an assessment. And I'm always on myself to play better, to learn more, to learn a new rhythm. One of the reasons my hand's jacked up is I practice an insane amount of hours.
Yeah.
And you can't teach this craft without that love of it, without that desire to share it. It can't be a job.
Just trying in vain to live up to a publicist's ramblings. Here's the greatest. Oh, my God. She's wonderful. She's She's marvelous. She can't play. What the hell's the matter with you?
And that's been a few cases. But it's not just the banjo. We've been to guitar workshops with some very prominent, we've interviewed some very prominent guitar players.
We look at each other and say, what the hell did we just see?
One guy, I'm glad we didn't, I think the tape's still there. You rolled the tape. I was jamming with him. And all I was playing was Baltimore Fire. It was on Silver Falls by Narrow, and I heard a cry I never will remember. G, C, and D. I think I couldn't follow it. And that's when I realized that his signature song, I won't say the song, what was bothering me about it was he had the time signature wrong. He was playing it in 4-4 when it's actually in 3-4. The melody's actually in 3-4.
No.
And we sat there in our car, and I'm like, how can this happen? I know it's just that people aren't very curious, and they accept things at face value.
If the publicist says this is the greatest thing in the world, and she'll say that or he'll say that until the checks stop coming in, then the people read it and believe it. They won't question it. That's what we're programmed to do. So if you're a student,
yep,
don't be afraid to question, even challenge your teacher. You're giving them your money. You have the right to check the depth of their keel in the water. If it's superficial, you have a right to know that. If that's all you want, God bless you.
God bless you.
If you're a teacher, look at yourself. You know if you're a phony. You know if you're claiming that there are no chords, that there are no quarter notes. You know that's
the thing
bullshit.
The thing about the quarter notes actually cost me sleep, because in some cases, Dan, they actually say things like, well, what you do is you're doing the strike and then silently playing an eighth note rest, and then an eighth note rest, and then the thumb. So instead of a quarter note, of a quarter note and 2/8 notes.
That sounds like bamboozle to me, boy.
Well, I mean, this is a guy that, this is the guy, let's call them Dan and Bob. No last names. When we started our business with instructional videos, we were working with a banjo company. Not going to say the banjo company, because it's one of those companies with parts from China. You know, it wasn't a big deal. It was a way for us to get started. We get a call from NAMM. It's the guy from the banjo company telling us Dan and Bob are trash-talking us unmercifully. Cost us the deal. Okay, let it go. We move on. We were better off without the deal. As things work out. We start out Somerset County Banjos. We get an email from Dan and Bob demanding sample banjos. Now, these guys at the time were endorsing literally every banjo brand. It's like Kathy Fink. There isn't a banjo brand that Kathy Fink hasn't endorsed at some point. And if you haven't gotten her yet, you know, go ahead, because at some point the endorsements stop having value. I mean, the thing with Earl Scruggs doing Gibson his whole career, except for that short period where they didn't pay him and he played a Vega, created a brand. But when you change it constantly. So we were kind of weirded out by this whole, you know, endorsing every model thing, and you want free banjo. So we responded with nuts. Just that. Innocent. You know, you mess with us once, you're messing with us again. They called the guys building instruments for us. We only found out because Lowell Jacobs was like, guys, what did you do to Dan and Bob? And then Bob threatens to use a magazine to put us out of business. Now, all of this is fascinating for one important reason. I've never met Dan and Bob. I've only had a couple of bumps into them on the internet. This stuff happens. Blew our minds. And then we get more into the business with the publishing, we find out it's constant. And what's happened, if you're a student, understand something. And I want to end on this. Number one, process over product. Do not be swayed by the superficial attributes of the performance. Anybody can memorize a performance. I can memorize a soliloquy from Shakespeare. It does not make me a Shakespearean actor, because to be a Shakespearean actor, you have to go through the process. And it's not easy. That's why guys like Patrick Stewart, even now that he's a fossil, because he can speak clearly, still gets jobs. They're still paying him millions of dollars because he did the training. That doesn't mean if you do the training, you're going to get that job. But the process takes you where you need to go.
You can at least be competitive.
Process over product. The last thing, you are not a product. You are not something to be traded. You are not something to be lured in. You are not something to be looked at as a means to an end. Teaching, yes, sometimes it turns into a job. Sometimes a teacher has to charge for lessons. That's not a big deal. The money isn't the issue. What are you buying? And how does the teacher view you? Because a lot of the methods now don't take you anywhere. You're going to be following tab. You're going to be stuck at jam sessions wishing you could play for the rest of your life.
God, we've seen them sitting, clutching their banjo necks between their legs.
And 20 years, they're in the same place.
Yeah.
Even the guys chasing me around the internet today play the exact same way they did back in 97.
Well, they're empty vessels.
But you can't do the art. You can't do an art, even badly, and not get better at it in 27 years. It's impossible.
Well, we've seen it.
It's impossible.
The same rants, the same baloney, the same bullshit, year after year, month after month.
It's always a sales pitch and tradition. Oh, God. Folks, tradition isn't what you think it is. A lot of things that get flashlighted as traditional, the stars and bars. People hold it up and say, I have to show this. It's my heritage. Problem is, that's Robert E. Lee's battle flag, not the Confederate battle flag.
He was a traitor.
Well, that. Okay, you got the whole traitorism thing. You got the whole racism thing. And then you have the fact it's the wrong flag.
That was the Army of Northern Virginia.
Right. The Confederates had their own flag. There was a red banner. There was actually a couple of versions of them. And none of them are the ones you see rednecks have on their bumper sticker. So
it's all bullshit.
So when you see people dressing like a character from the Foxfire book, when you see people trying to talk about
Appalachia.
Oh, God. I will name this name. Dwight Diller. Dad mentioned the Appalachian Mountains. And Dwight, excuse me, it's Appalachia. And I'm behind the camera trying not to pee my pants laughing because it had gotten so surreal by that point. And I'm looking at Dad, and Dad's like, gives me the signal to roll it. We just, excuse me, it's Appalachia.
What?
Number one, no, it isn't. And number two, what? I mean, it's one thing to say the belly button's located on the back. Excuse me, it is not. That's not a belly button. But they just, and there's, you'll see this all the time. They'll throw something completely out of Dr. Seuss at you and then insist that it's authentic, it's real. The Gord Banjo thing. We don't know how these instruments were tuned. We barely know how they were played. And the modern versions, everybody's running around and expecting everybody to tune down to low E or something. They're cool. They're a lot of fun, but they're not going to give you the response that an actual five-string banjo will give you.
They're toy banjos.
It's the version. It's the musical version of point fighting.
Yeah.
You move your arms, and it looks like karate. Then you get in a fight, and your mom's at the hospital, there's tears, and you're like, I thought I was tough. Where's my teeth? They're in a jar.
We're saving them for yourself.
Along with your thumb. So when you're out there, when you're looking for lessons, when you come to somebody like me, when I work with a student, my hope is they're going to get the information, and then they're going to leave.
Go away.
Because I mean, one of the reasons I do crazy things like drop off the internet every now and then is the worst thing a teacher can become is the leader of a cargo cult. I don't want people waiting for my next product, waiting for my next project. I'm not rewriting the how and the Tao of old-time banjo for people that bought the book back in 2003. I'm rewriting the book for people that are picking up the banjo for the first time in 2021. You have to change. You have to grow.
It's going to be an interesting project. We'll talk about that in a few.
I just wanted to float that out there.
It's going
to
be.
that's the ripple in the water glass.
The boy is, he's getting the harness ready and the whip, and he's going to put dear old dad to work.
Oh yeah.
But listen, don't be afraid to ask your teacher if you want to sing and play. Ask, and if they can't or won't do it, then you have two options. You can accept that and remain a one-trick pony. Or you can say, well, I got to go find somebody who can give me what I ask and paying for it.
You have to learn from as many sources as you can.
Exactly.
And you have to self-direct. I'm very proud of the work that I've done. Not prideful, proud. But it is hard to spend 20 years going, how you doing, folks? Patrick here. I got the five-string banjo out. We're going to do the basic frailing strum. We're going to strike a string. We're going to strum a chord. We're going to thumb the fifth string. That's a quarter note and two eighth notes. So we're going to count.
There are no quarter notes.
Two and three.
There are no quarter notes.
One, two. So I do this, and I do this for 23 years. Somebody comes to me, and I've been using your lessons. I've been doing this and this. I started, but then I went to this guy. Now I'm doing it this way. Or my favorite. I look at him, well, okay, let's do it again. We're going to strike a string, strum a chord, thumb the fifth string. And they'll do something completely different. And I know it works because there's people out there.
Oh, yeah,
doing,
there's a lot of people playing. Yeah.
But you have to self-direct, folks. You have reserves of strength. You have capabilities you've never tapped into. We go through our lives being told celebrities, sports athletes, everybody is better than you. And I don't like to quote Charles Bukowski, but I will this time.
Who is he?
He was a poet.
Okay.
And he wrote some really good stuff, but it's kind of like Ayn Rand in that, or however you say your crazy name, in that when people start really heavily quoting them, you know to run away. But he wrote one poem that I like called The Secret, and to go along the lines is that it tells you that nobody has the beautiful lady, the guy in the mansion's not happy, nobody's special, including you. And now that you know this, that's the victory. There's nothing anybody's doing that you can't apply yourself and do. Okay, at 70, you're not going to pole vault like a 15-year-old. But if you're 70 and you're crazy enough to pole vault, as long as you're doing it safely, God bless you. Maybe you won't break records, but you can do it.
No, you'll break ribs.
But those pole vaulter pads are pretty soft. We know. We had a stuntman.
Yeah, yeah.
We actually did a show with a stuntman on the city dock in Crisfield.
Wow, that was fun.
So this was a one-hour special on teaching. I know that we've probably upset somebody.
Oh, I don't care. The hell with them.
I'm actually playing the gadfly here and there. Intentionally, because it's at the point now, if somebody doesn't start questioning this stuff, what's going to happen to the craft?
It'll turn into a mishmash.
Oh, and banjo contests, don't go, don't enter, don't. It's like every contest festival with a contest we've been in contact with. We always know, like the judges, who's going to win before anybody signs up for the contest. It's an empty prize. And there's been a drive in recent years to just get this one tune down for the contest. Well, there's a lot more to music than one tune. There's a lot more to music than performing a tune.
The what you want to be able to do is take your instrument, go sit down and sit in on any jam session, country, blues, rock and roll, old time, folk, and just by knowing the key signature, the time signature, and a rough estimate of the chord progression, you can sit down, make music, and communicate with other musicians. Let the one-trick ponies, the phonies, the bamboozlers go off and cry into their hankies and tell you, you're doing it wrong. That son of a bitch is wrong. No, just go have fun. I'm going
to
go.
We're on the road to nowhere. Come on, let's ride. Taking that ride to nowhere. Come on, let's ride. Well, I'm feeling okay this morning. And you know, we're on the road to paradise. Here we go. Here we go.
Now, Bob, Dan, D-White, Ken, come on, let's see. Play for me, boy.
Now, folks, remember, it is a road to nowhere in this respect. The teacher is only a source. And the simple thing is, it's picking up a banjo, and it's singing and playing a song. And if you can't do that, if it comes out, my favorite example, I can actually play it this way. And the reason I can actually play that one exactly as we recorded it in the field was when we got back to the shed hotel, I was in such disbelief over what I saw that I had to figure out exactly how those things were happening. And one of the things that was being taught at that workshop, he was teaching this. And then when he did it himself, it would come out like this. And he was trying to get the students were driving themselves crazy. They were trying to match.
It was a bamboozle.
He was throwing an upstroke in there.
Yeah.
And when we got back to the hotel cabin, shed.
Pallet rack.
I went through all this. I'm looking at Dad. And be better. Be better than me. Don't look at me like I hit a level or something. I'm still growing. And I'm handicapped. You can do better than me. Teachers, students alike. And believe it or not, even the bad ones, even somebody like Dan and Bob or Ken. Hello, Ken. They could still be useful.
There's a place for people like that.
But you got to drop the nonsense and be honest about what you're presenting. I tell people up front, I'm deaf. I mean,
there are no quarter notes.
Oh, God.
Don't you understand?
Well, okay, so you're counting as eighth notes. It's one end. Okay, what have you accomplished by taking that taking an eighth note away? We're still using the same dead
end. You're separating yourself from real musicians.
And you have to separate yourself from the bum ditty. Oh, that was the. I got to touch on this before we go. See, that's what happens when we keep talking. Basic frailing, quarter note to eighth notes. Stu Jameson recorded Rufus Crisp playing this way back in the 40s. Before that, long before that, Bill Cunningham was documenting what his uncles and grandfathers were teaching him in North Carolina. And guess what it was?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
And a lot of the guys that don't teach basic frailing now, guess what? They learned from the sources that Bill Cunningham and Stu Jameson put together for Idlewild. A lot of people you've heard of either used instruction material for there or at the camp or used the book that was basically written from the notes Bill handed out at that workshop. So there was a long line of people playing this. The reason it fell out of fashion on the banjo forums is banjo teachers saw the unauthorized guy was getting attention, so they actually cooked up a different approach to the instrument
that.
For that.
Yeah.
And they even changed bump dit t the way I wrote it to bum ditty. Literally everything I taught, they balderized. It was like Mark Twain's wife putting pant legs on the table legs. It was that level, that level crazy and weird. So two things. It's not about how great I am. I'll be the first to tell you, I'm a hot-headed Philadelphia street-fighting schmuck, self-educated enough to be intelligent, but not educated. I'll admit that. I'm a good banjo player, in spite of my handicaps. The people competing with me, and I'm not in competition with them,
actually
changed the foundational basics of the craft.
So they weren't doing the same thing.
And now you've got a giant bamboozle, just roll, like a tumbleweed. All right, we got to go.
Even boy. Ken Perlman taught the basic frailing in one of his early books. And then halfway through, it went to, well, now let me show you how smart I am. And we both looked at that half and went, because it didn't hold together.
No.
It's like making a brownie with no eggs. Try it.
I wouldn't think of such a thing.
You need it's like cheese. You need some.
Now binding. Listen, girls and boys, in your prayers tonight, say a prayer for Dan and Bob and Ken and
Dan, Bob, Ken, all the other idiots. It's cool. I'm not angry. I've never really thought of myself in competition with you. I never really thought of myself as anything but myself. Whatever you see me as, whatever you perceive me as, that's on you. And whatever you've done to the craft, that's on you, not on me.
And to the rotten things you've done underground, behind our backs.
I don't care.
Sure, your sins will find you out.
Well, that's... You know what hell really is, Dad? The life you build for yourself.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The phone stops ringing. The book stops selling. You start realizing that it's harder to memorize tunes. years go on. You start getting older, and it gets hard to keep that memory bank.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
And all of a sudden, here comes some schmuck. And there's always, the thing is, there's always Listen to Running Gun by Marty Robbins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody thinks they're a gunfighter until Wyatt Earp walks in the bar. And the problem is there's a new Wyatt Earp about every 3 years.
Yep. And not created by a publicist, created by hard work and effort.
Yep. The real ones you never see coming.
Yeah.
The ones that you see being written up and elevated to childhood, they might have careers.
Feel sorry for them.
But it's not a life.
No. No, they're not real.
And
as soon as mom and dad stop writing the checks, the
publicist forgets they exist.
That's right. All right. Listen, I got to go. We're going to sign off now. Don't forget, say your prayers. Pray for the...
And remember, you're your best teacher. Self-direct. You're capable of more things than you think you are. And you've allowed the lens of society to distort how you view yourself.
We learned our craft by doing it.
Yeah.
By going to jams that were ahead of us, setting goals, reaching them.
We played for the sick and the dying.
Yeah.
In hospital rooms and hospices. We've played for crowds. We've played in parades. We once, and I'll end on this, we once played our banjos as the Republican Ladies Auxiliary.
Oh, my God, I
was
forgot.
Sucked slowly into the ground.
The mud.
The dark, thick Chesapeake soil.
That's a story unto itself. Signing off. Jill.
It's true. They really were. It was beautiful. I was like, the Republicans are going back to hell. But of course, that was the wrong thing to say because the Republican Party was paying me. We met our congressman, but he never spoke. The guy behind him always spoke.
Yeah,
and I said, do you have his hand up his shirt? Can he speak?
The congressman says.
Is he tool-bearing? Does he have higher functions? And he's like, he loves your music. Did he have dental surgery?
It never ends. It never...
The Republicans are going back to hell.
Say goodnight to the girls and boys.
And remember, it's all fun and games until the president wears his pants backwards.
I still don't understand. I've seen too much.
Maybe he was inflating it to attract a mate.
Oh,